Welcome to Totally Pretentious, a podcast about great movies. I'm Sean.
I'm Rachel.
And as you can tell, David's not here. And there's a very good reason for that. It's that Rachel and I have no lives and we watch way too many movies.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
It's not. It's wonderful. But David didn't feel comfortable because he hadn't watched enough movies. So it was originally going to be the three of us. And now it's just the two. So
just
yay.
Just the two of us.
No. Now I'm going to have to put that music in here.
See, and sadly, the only version of that I know is like the Austin Powers version. So in my mind, I am now Dr. Evil and you are Mini-Me.
Oh, but that's not fair. Well, anyway.
Hey, it's my daydream. I get to call the shots.
Fair enough. So we're here today to talk about the Oscars because we're a podcast about movies. Why wouldn't we talk about the Oscars? And so Rachel and I have watched as many of the things as we possibly can, which is probably about half of the things that are actually on the Oscars list. And we're going to talk about it and talk about our thoughts about the Oscars. But before we get into the talking about the individual movies, specifically the Best Picture category, we should probably mention, you know, the elephant in the room, which is that there's a considerable amount of protest regarding the Oscars this year, specifically that the Oscars are once again predominantly white and that works by people of color in particular seem to have been snubbed. At least that's the argument being made. And regardless of the perspective on this individual year, it is certainly true that people of color do not typically win Oscars, let alone get nominated, by comparison to their more white counterparts. So that's been the larger conversation. And Rachel, did you have any particular opinions on this subject?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty bullshit that this has happened, because obviously there's plenty of, you know, because part of the problem is there's not nearly as many as there should be. But one of the particular criticism has been, you know, in a year that Creed came out and Straight Outta Compton came out, and both of those got roundly snubbed, except for Sylvester Stallone in Creed.
Yeah, which is a little weird, that particular absence, because, well, I mean, he's got for supporting actor, and I think he's fine in it. But it is kind of strange that Michael B. Jordan isn't also on that list, given that his performance is just as good as Stallone's. Now, maybe one of those things, they only have so many slots to put people in, and maybe he just didn't quite make the cut. And it's entirely possible that this year, like, this may be the performances the Academy really didn't think so. But when you're looking back, we should mention, right, that on the one hand, the Oscars are not picking a lot of people of color to be at any of the categories. I mean, 12 Years a Slave was such a big deal, and I still think that Chiwetel Ejiofor honestly was just shafted for that. I think he should have won.
He was amazing. But I mean, it's basically like if you took any individual year in isolation, you could try to make that argument.
Sure, it's the collection of years.
Yeah, when you look back, you're like, no, this is totally a pattern. And I remember I saw someone yesterday on Twitter mentioning, oh God, it's like for the number of times, you know, say an African-American woman has been nominated for like Best Actress or Best Supporting Actress, it's almost universally been because she's been depicting a character that's in poverty or, you know, or a slave or something like that. And it becomes this pattern. I mean, I remember it was a huge deal when, the director of Gravity won last year, right?
Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah, because he was the first, you know, Latino director to win an Oscar. And it was huge. And then I remember I was watching with a friend, because that was also when 12 Years a Slave was up for a lot of stuff, and it was like, okay, well, I guess they blew their wad on, you know, their one non-white person getting a big award, so 12 Years a Slave is, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder, too, that keeping in mind, we're, like, talking about the Best Picture category in specific, right, that it's probably true that a Latino has won in the foreign film category.
Yeah, but this is for Best Director. That was
Best
why
Director,
it was so
big,
huge.
Big top categories. Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think, too, that so, like, there are two sides to this. The one is, like, the Oscars are biased. And I think on a larger, when we're looking in the aggregate, it's certainly true that there's a bias. And the Oscars, I'm glad that this year they finally decided they're going to be more proactive in putting in people who do the voting and nominating process. I don't know who those people are, but to get more people of color in that process, I'm glad that they announced they're going to do that. I'm glad that they're letting Chris Rock basically do anything other than probably curse a lot on TV. They seem to be perfectly fine with Chris Rock ripping them during the ceremony, because there's been nothing I've heard about them trying to stop him. He's rewritten his entire routine in order to comment on this. The other thing that I think this reveals, and I've heard this on the In Session Film Podcast, and I agree, it seems to me that there aren't as many major productions being made by people of color or starring people of color. And so it sort of hints at a bigger problem within Hollywood, which we've known about for a long time, which is like this outside of a couple, like a handful of, you know, black actors, right? There aren't that many major productions, you know, big blockbusters, big dramatic films being made which star people of color, except in cases when it's like things like slavery, you know, like basically the quote unquote Hollywood version of the black experience, where it's like Misery and destruction and terror and awful. It's like, right, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's been just a historically commented upon problem. That's why, you know, it's also something you hear talked. It's not quite as bad of a problem now with LGBT, but the biggest, you know, now it's like everyone's talking about the trans trend, which is bullshit for a lot of reasons. But now it's kind of like, oh, well, now we can tell stories of tragic queers. It's kind of like we can tell stories of black people suffering. And it's really bothersome, and part of it is a casting decision issue. And you know, there, and but then you look at like writers, you know, what's kind of the demographics of the writers, and you know, a lot of times people have focused on women because women are also just like fucked in the film industry, but people of color, and then, you know, women of color are fucked even worse. And it's just this granular problem in every part of the industry. And, you know, that's why it was like, however you might feel about The Force Awakens, it was such a huge deal to have John Boyega. It was such a huge deal.
It was.
And it's like, you know, we're taking him and putting him in the spotlight. And I was so excited, even for just that reason, you know. So hopefully people keep pushing back, but it's even things like, you know, when people freak out about, you know, say casting Michael B. Jordan to be Johnny Storm. Am I getting that name right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And when people are talking about, hey, could we have a black Spider-Man, and the internet like fell on our heads. It's all, you know, when people freak the fuck out about Idris Elba as Heimdall.
I still, you know, don't get that. He's amazing as Heimdall.
Oh, so. God, he is so fucking amazing. I don't think they could have found a white guy on the planet that would have done as good a job as him. He's amazing.
He's just got a presence.
Like, he's got so much oh, and
there's just something about when he's standing there in his little suit with his like, that thing
his
that he uses, the sword.
Suit. You make it sound like he's a onesie or something. See, now
yes,
I want to see, like,
Idris Elba like
in, like, in, like, yeah, like, or, like, footy pajamas with, like, a little plush Heimdall helmet holding a sword. Like,
my words failed me. I meant, you know, his armor, his big shiny armor. But he's just, you don't want to fuck with him.
No, he's amazing. And he's just, he brings so much gravitas to that. I love everything Idris Elba does.
Well, like that comic thing, we probably maybe move on after this. But
well, yeah.
The comic thing, like, you'll hear that argument, like, oh, well, why don't you just make black characters or make whatever characters, whatever the thing is. And it's like, yeah, that's great, but you understand, like, a lot of these characters that are having their races or their genders switched a bit, they're characters that have been around for 30, 40, 50 years. Some of these characters are really important, and they're iconic. It's not like tomorrow if they made a black character in a comic and went, like, this is the new cool dude, like, next week they're going to be making a Marvel movie about it, right?
Exactly.
I love Ms. Marvel. I know we're not going to get a Ms. Marvel movie. Maybe never, or if so, maybe not for a long time, because despite how popular she may be right now, Marvel has its own, like, plan for its films and how it wants to set up. And given that Ms. Marvel is a different kind of incarnation of an existing character, I mean, she's not like a literal, like, we're just going to change the race thing. It's obviously a different character, but we have to have the Carol Danvers Captain Marvel before we can even get to Ms. Marvel, because it wouldn't make sense without that. So, like, we're never going to get there just because we've got one popular character now. I mean, the idea that we might have had Miles Morales in the Avengers universe versus the other one where the actual Spider-Man exists, like, that was never going to happen, but I wished it would. I would have killed to have Miles Morales Spider-Man. That would have been so amazing. But, like, that's the problem. Like, it's like they made Miles Morales fairly later on, and then we're probably never going to see a film version. We'll see cartoon versions, possibly, but a film version? Maybe not for a long time, which is really sad. But that's the problem. We're talking about, like, a history where people of color have been largely excluded. Like, the fact that we've got Luke Cage coming, Power Man, right? It's kind of a big deal, because he's one of the few that have existed for a long time. There aren't that many.
And I mean, I think one of the most powerful arguments against having this sort of blinkered view of, oh, the character has always been X, so we must cast them as X, therefore, too bad, so sad, people who aren't white, is just, you know, look at the success of Hamilton.
Mm, yeah.
Like, I think the only white person in the main cast of Hamilton is the guy who plays King George, which is just a beautiful statement in and of itself. So, I mean, he also has one of my favorite songs in the show because it's so ludicrous, but, it's just in the year 2016, there are no more excuses.
Yeah.
Stop even trying. You're just insulting us, you know?
Yeah.
And it's something that needs to happen at all levels. And there is, like, this chicken and the egg thing where people are like, oh, well, but there's not that much stuff with people of color, so we don't nominate them, and therefore profiles don't get raised, because, you know, having an Oscar on your shelf opens a lot of doors to you, no matter what your job is. So it's like, you know, how are you going to elevate people if you're just like, it's that, oh, well, you need experience, but we're not going to hire you to give you the experience that you need. Whoops. it's so, oh God, it's just infuriating, and I hate it, and things need to change. And that's like, literally, I love my screenwriting class that I'm in right now, because that's a few of us actually kind of focus on that as critique. Like, you know, why do you have so many male characters? Why are all of them white?
Yeah, because there has to be a good reason for it. You can't just, like, it's too lazy to just default, right?
Yeah,
like,
pretty much.
I can understand, like, if your story's about, like a fraternity and almost all of your characters are dudes, it's like, yeah, because it's in a fraternity, right? Which is typically a dude, or I think always a dude organization, but to be,
I think you can have, like, co-ed fraternities in particular, but I don't know.
They must be uncommon. It can't be that common. Yeah.
I don't know. Hopefully someone will yell at us and tell us. But yeah, we should probably,
we gotta move on.
Yeah, actually talk about the thing.
So, we'll start by talking about Best Picture nominees. I think we have seen all of them. I missed The Big Short.
But I saw it.
But you saw it. That was a stupid thing on my front. I went to watch Creed because I thought I had seen all of the Best Picture nominees. However, I'm glad I watched Creed, so whatevs. And I believe you have missed Room and one other on here?
I missed Spotlight.
Spotlight.
Because I couldn't find them to rent and I couldn't see them in the theater.
Well, I will just say this. Room is a really tough movie. I recommend it. It's very good. Spotlight is also tough, but it's less tough. The subject matter is tough, but the focus isn't on the subject matter occurring. It's on the unveiling of the subject matter, if that makes sense. Because it's about the Catholic priest thing. And so it's about Spotlight, the part of the Boston Globe that unveiled it, right? The extent of it.
Are we going to just kind of, like, go through one at a time? Or
yes.
Like,
I think we should. Cool. So I'm just going to start with the order in which they're presented to me on the Wikipedia page. And the first one of the nominees is The Big Short, starring Brad Pitt, Dee Dee Gardner, and Jeremy Kleiner, if I am correct, directed by Adam McKay. and I've not seen it, although I am told it's about the banking business.
Yes.
So, Rachel, just some general thoughts about what you think about its inclusion here.
There was some that I liked about it, and that was very creative. I appreciated that it was about the banking crisis. It was actually about how the subprime mortgage crisis worked and caused the banking system to fall apart. And it has like this almost at times like mix of quasi documentary style. Characters also occasionally break the fourth wall and talk directly to the camera. There's a couple times when they're having to stop and explain how particular financial instruments work so you can understand why this is a really bad thing and why some of the characters are freaking out, where they're like, okay, we're going to take a moment and I'm going to have this celebrity or that celebrity explain in a much more simple to understand way what's going on with this and why it's bad. So to that extent, I thought it was a very interesting style, and I thought, you know, it was a very well-made movie. Also, I kind of appreciated the fact that a lot of these characters are kind of fucking awful people because, you know, they're in banking and they're making their money in a really kind of awful way, and it doesn't go all Wolf of Wall Street and try to make us cheer for them, which I also really appreciated.
Yeah, that's always nice.
Yeah. But I also had some serious problems that I couldn't really articulate effectively until the person who writes Hello, Taylor wrote about the Big Short. And it is, as usual, like a very guy-heavy movie. And it, with one notable exception, when they're talking to somebody who I want to say is at the SEC, who is a historical figure who actually, you know, well, I mean, historical is current history, but she's a real person and is a woman. The only time you really see women in this movie is when they're like strippers or, you know, there's two times that women are involved in the explanations of the financial instruments, and I found them very, very problematic, because in one, it's like, and I'm sorry, everyone, I'm just the worst ever at names, so please forgive me. This really beautiful actress who's sitting in a bubble bath and drinking a glass of wine and being super pretty and explaining this thing. And the other one, it's Selena Gomez, and it's her and a guy, and he's getting kind of like the meat and potatoes detail, and she's sort of, you know, there to be the example. And it just really bothered me for a lot of reasons.
That's fair. That's fair. Overall, do you think it, would you have put it on the Best Picture category? Or do you think it maybe is one that could have been replaced?
I mean, I'm not going to necessarily say that it was the greatest ever, but compared to several of the other movies I saw, I thought it had more of a reason to be on Best Picture than some of them.
Fair enough. And that's kind of my opinion of a lot of the films. There are a few on here that I would have certainly replaced.
And I mean, I feel like The Big Short is also has a slightly more interesting place on Best Picture just because it's not a straight drama.
Ah, okay, so it's a little bit more...
Oh, it's quite funny. I mean, as much as it's kind of horrifying at times, it's also pretty funny in certain ways, so I guess you could classify it as more like a dramedy. And plus the way it's shot and cut, it has more of like comedy pacing.
Okay. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we jump on to Bridge of Spies, which is one that I have seen and which is one that I don't think actually belongs here.
Yeah. I feel like it just got put on there because it's a Steven Spielberg movie.
But it's not even like Spielberg at his best. It's like, if you ask me, which movie would you like to watch again, Bridge of Spies or War of the Worlds, I'll watch War of the Worlds.
Ouch.
It's not that, like, a Bridge of Spies is, like, technically a better film than War of the Worlds, but I felt
it's not nearly as fun.
It's not as fun, and which is fine, because it's supposed to be a drama, but, like, this, so, like, there are two problems I have with Bridge of Spies. One, it's on a subject matter we have seen a dozen times already. Like, not this necessarily a specific story, but, like, the Cold War. And I'm kind of tired of the black and white, like, either direction on the Cold War, like, either, like, there are communists everywhere and, like, they're all evil, or the opposite, which is, like, the treatment of suspected communists is just wrong because America was 100% wrong during the Cold War. I'm kind of bored of that narrative because it's just simple. It's too easy to just tell it like that. And everyone just, except for the main character, seemed like a villain in this movie. Everyone was trying to fuck over everyone else. And there seems to be no moral position taken on any of that. At least with the way you describe Big Short, like, I understand the reasons for why they're turds, right? Because they're existing in a system where that's the case. But, like, the Cold War, like, people believed they were doing the right thing, right? And I just felt like throughout the Bridge of Spies, a lot of the people knew they were doing the wrong thing and didn't give a shit. And it just seemed so black and white, and I didn't like that. I also just thought, it's just okay. It's not, there's nothing unique about it. It's nothing special. Yeah. I mean, there's some good performances, but it's just sort of, eh, okay.
I mean, I might have liked it a little more than you did, but mostly my biggest problem with it is I felt like it had a very slow pace. As far as the actual story itself went, I mean, I didn't really have any problems with it. I actually kind of liked this idea of, you know, I'm a sucker for stories about lawyers who are like, no, I'm going to defend this person who I know is a guilty asshole to the best of my ability because that's my job. I'm kind of a sucker for those, and, you know, American justice system, yay, because then you can forget for a minute that there's all kinds of major problems with the legal system. But I felt it was very slow paced. I mean, it's obviously in there to be kind of like historical drama wank.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to the other two historical dramas on the list, it definitely has more business being here than, like, Brooklyn, but it didn't really feel like it was that special, I guess, because, yeah, we have seen this kind of movie before, and I mean, no one turned in a bad performance, but no one... There was nothing memorable I really found about that movie, other than I can look back and be like, I remember Tom Hanks' character was like a really stand-up guy, but I don't even remember any particular scenes with him other than, oh, him getting his coat stolen. I remember that.
Yeah, and it's also a film that I felt like there are a lot of films this year that I didn't like the ending. I felt like the ending, like, so this film, honestly, I thought that The Bridge of Spies should have ended when he collapsed on the bed and fell asleep. That should have been it.
Yeah, that would have been a good place to end.
But then they had to have, like, 9 other endings after it. They had to have the lady on the train. They had to have, like, whatever happens. I don't even remember after that, because I just want to remember just that moment where he collapsed. Because remember, he tells us so many times in the movie, like, I'm sick, and I want to go home, and I want to go to bed. And everyone thinks he's rushing because he's... you know, he's just an American. He just can't, he's not patient. It's like, no, I'm sick and I want to go home to my bed because I don't want to be here. And I feel like that's the perfect ending. Just stop. He's collapsed on the bed.
We know that, I think Steven Spielberg has a well-established problem with ending things. He likes to keep going. I mean, just think about AI.
Fair enough. Yeah.
It, how many endings does one movie need? Leave some endings for the rest of us, Spielberg!
and obviously we should mention so it's directed by Spielberg, produced by Spielberg, Mark Platt, Christy McCosko-Krieger, and starring Tom Hanks, Mark Rylance, Amy Ryan, and apparently Alan Alda. I don't know if I would say he's starring in it.
Yeah.
He has a small role.
Well,
but,
I mean, yeah. I think they normally, a lot of times, it's kind of like the people that are listed as starring for The Big Short are not necessarily, like, Brad Pitt is not in that movie very much, so I honestly think a lot of times when they give people starring billing, it's not because they have that big of a part, it's because they're that famous. Like, obviously,
yeah.
Tom Hanks is in almost every scene, but
yeah,
there's a lot of the other characters where I'm like, really? Are they
One, Mark Rylance is nominated for, I think he's in Best Supporting Actor, if I recall correctly. I'm not looking at the list in the moment. And I did want to issue a correction. The names I listed when I talked about The Big Short, those are the production credits. The actual starring roles were Christian Bale, Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, and Brad Pitt. So, yeah.
Yeah, Brad Pitt, I still don't know why he's listed as starring, because his character, he's kind of being the support for two younger guys who are doing financial speculation, and they're like in the movie way fucking more. Mark Rylance is nominated for best actor or actor in a supporting role, which, yeah, he's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was fine. He was pretty effective for what he was, so yeah. You know, such is life. All right, so we'll jump on then to Brooklyn.
Yes.
Brooklyn, directed by John Crowley. Produced by Finola Dwyer, Amanda Posey, Thorsten Schumacher, Beth Pattison, Pierre Evan, starring Saoirse Ronan, if I got her name correctly. I know that's the thing.
Is it Saoirse or is it Showrice or something like that? I'm so terrible.
I don't think it's Showrice.
Okay.
I think it's closer to Saoirse or Saoirse.
Oh, God. We're terrible. I'm sorry, everyone.
She gets this a lot, apparently, and I watched a bunch of videos where her pronounced her name, and I probably just butchered it, so you can just kill me now. Yeah, but anyway, so it stars her, Emery Cohen, Domhnall Gleeson, Jim Broadbent, Julie Walters, a couple of other people. Also happens to have Felicity from Arrow, in case that's your thing. Although she's not as sweet and nice as she is in Arrow, she's kind of a turd in this movie, so fun times. But anyway, so my general thoughts, I actually really like this. I liked it more when the character stopped being this innocent, quiet person and started to become much more of a character, because that kind of just bugged me. It reminded me too much of The Host. And
I mean,
who she's in this too, by the way, that one too.
I liked it in the sense that, you know, I wouldn't mind watching it again. I was thoroughly charmed by it, and especially after I had just seen The Big Short. Let me tell you, going and seeing Brooklyn was amazing, because I was just like, oh my god, there's so many women. And plus, they at least make an effort to, you know, at least there's a lot of background extras that are not white, which is, like, yes, thank you. Now I feel slightly more like I'm in the world's cleanest version of New York City. But this is one of the movies where I was like, after I got done watching it, I was like, why the fuck was it nominated for Best Picture? Because it's good, and it gets its job done, and, you know, it's a very sweet kind of, like, character story, but I didn't really, it was one where I was like, I don't really see what is special about this film, where it, you know, if we're just kind of going towards the Best Picture goes to a movie that kind of gets the job done and does what it says on the tin, there are a lot of movies that do that.
Yeah, I guess I kind of understand why it is here. I don't know if I would replace it. I'm not sure what there are other films that I for sure would replace on this list. The one we just talked about previously would be one that I would immediately replace with Ex Machina, without question. Brooklyn, I can kind of understand. I think that the way in which it addresses the immigrant experience, specifically obviously the Irish immigrant experience, is really interesting, because it's told through a love story, and it's not West Side Story again, which I really, really appreciate that it's not just retelling that kind of story. It's actually about using the romance as sort of symbolic for that conflict that people go through when they leave their home countries and they want to return. And I think this film's a little kind of pro-American, which I found weird. Because that's not usually what you see. But I saw that the comparison being made was, you know, America as being much more of an open culture, being much more open to her growing into herself while keeping her culture. Whereas when she goes home, right, she even says when she gets confronted by the baker lady, right, and the baker lady has been, like, using her secret spy network of Irish people, like, in America. I don't know how she's obviously, like, KGB, right? And confronts her and says, oh, you're clearly married, you shouldn't be with this other dude, blah, 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 blah. And what she tells her is, you know, I've forgotten what this town is like, which is it's a town where you cannot have secrets, where everyone will intrude into your life and then try to moralize and abuse you at every turn. Whereas the experience she has in America, there's still some of that, but she gets less of it. It's much more open. She's much more able to do things that she wouldn't be able to do at home because she'd be constantly worried about the baker lady trying to ruin her reputation or trying to hurt her in some way. I like that aspect of it. I do think that it took a little too long to get to. I think that's mostly just kind of a writing thing. But yeah, overall, it was fine. It was good.
Well, I mean, and I actually really appreciated the way it was filmed. One thing that I found really striking about Brooklyn is the way they filtered it. So everything kind of looks like an old colorized photograph a bit.
Oh, interesting. I didn't really notice that.
Oh, it has this very soft look to it that I really loved, that, you know, is very different from a lot of what you see. And it's okay. It's sweet. It just didn't particularly reach in and grab me anywhere. You know, it didn't grab me by the spleen or the heart or anything. I was like, it's a good movie. It's okay. Which is not normally the reaction I expect myself to have for Best Picture nominees.
Fair enough.
All right.
Yeah. I will say that if I live back in this time and this is how dating was like, I would probably never date. It's just way too complicated.
Yeah, you just go to a dance and dance with a girl, apparently. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's all so, like, subdued. Like, they can't say how they really feel. It's kind of weird. And then they, like, get married somehow. How does marriage work in this society? They just say, come move in with me, and then that's it?
Well, no, they went to City Hall, and they got married by a justice of the peace.
But that's the way they're not supposed to do it. They're supposed to have, like, the proper marriage.
I'm assuming that Tony, and I would just like to call out this film right now for how disappointed I am that the main love interest is an Italian plumber and his name is not Mario. But I mean, assuming that he's Catholic too, yeah, they should have gone and, you know, had like a full mass and gotten married in the church and
etc. It's very weird. Yeah, but in any case. But anyway, so we can move on to the next film, which, Rachel, I think you're going to squee about.
Oh my god, yes! Mad Max!
Which I suspect at this moment, you and I both are going to agree is the best film of the year and deserves to win the Best Picture nominee.
Out of this list, yes. And I mean, if nothing else, because especially when you look at this list of films, Mad Max Fury Road is the film that gave us something new.
Yeah. It changed action movies. Let's say it did what action movies haven't been able to do.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, so you got this amazing action movie where it's got all this incredible amount of stunt work. And I mean, what I really thought was interesting is I read this entire article about actually how much computer graphics they used. And they did a lot, but none of it was the shit like the stunts. A lot of it was color balancing and making all the skies look consistent.
Giving sense of
scale.
With
the backgrounds. Yeah. So, I mean, it means that they sat down and they went and they used computer-aided graphics in the right way.
Yeah, yes. It's a wonderful film. So, obviously, directed by George Miller, produced by Doug Mitchell. Starring the primary roles being Tom Hardy and Charlize Theron, the latter of which many people have been upset about for not having received a Best Actress nomination.
Yeah, it's so bullshit. Like, what the fuck?
I kind of understand it, and I think it's because the way in which they pick for the best, like, Best Actor, Actress categories, they're not picking for best person acting in the moments they're provided, but the actual performance beyond the action. And so much of what Charlize Theron does is action oriented, and I understand that the Academy probably isn't going to lead towards that. They're going to be looking more towards like Saoirse Ronan's performance than they are towards something like that. So I mean, I guess
the reason that bothers me so much is just particularly the less dialogue the actor has to work with, and they're having to do everything with action, the harder it actually is for them. Like, if they can manage to convey complex feelings and thoughts without having to say anything, that is just fucking amazing. Because anyone can have, like, a really great monologue. But being able to be so good at your craft that people can understand what is going on inside the character without having to say a word is where it's at, the hardest stuff. And I thought there was so much of that in Mad Max because there was so little actual dialogue.
Well, fair enough. It's a good film.
It's so good.
It is so good. I just looked on the wiki page and it says that it was screened in 4DX. What the hell is 4DX? How can you have more than three dimensions? I don't understand.
I don't know. I don't know what that means. But, I mean...
Well, we're looking now.
Yeah, well... But anyway, I mean... I almost feel like there's not that much we need to say about... Well, we did... There was an entire Skiffy and Fanny episode about how freaking amazing Mad Max is.
So... This is gonna, we're gonna have to find a place to watch this. So apparently 4DX is, it adds environmental effects. It's like the ride at Disneyland, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, which some people will have ridden and other people will not have, and they will know how old I am.
I'm not sure I'd want to do that for Mad Max.
I don't know what it would be like, but apparently that's what 4DX is. So we just learned a thing. Yay.
Yeah, so the more you know.
Yeah, so at the moment, I mean, I should just say, like, Mad Max is my hopeful. I think it is the best film.
Yeah, no, I think it's the best. It was the most groundbreaking film of the year, and it was in a good way, and the performances were solid, etc., etc. Yeah. I don't honestly think it's going to win. I will be shocked and very happy if it does. But I don't think it's going to win.
It probably won't win. I mean, but for me, it's between Room and Mad Max, which are just as opposite as you can get. One is a drama about a woman who's kidnapped as a teenager by a predator and kept in a room and then eventually escapes.
Are they really that different?
Yeah. Well,
when you put it like that.
In terms of how it treats it, right, one is an action movie, the other is more of a straight drama. It's about the psychological, it's like deeply psychological. It's like following the minute moments, whereas Mad Max is like, this is the same basic idea is happening, but the response to that is, we're going to blow some shit up and murder some people.
And have a car chase that lasts for 2 hours straight.
Yeah. So they're very different. I'd be happy with either one, but to be honest, those are, for me, the two best films in the Best Picture category.
So. Yeah, and for me, I mean, out of the list, since I haven't seen Room, my two biggest picks are Mad Max and The Revenant.
That's a good point. So on that subject, I'm going to skip one. We're not going to skip it permanently, but we're just going to jump to The Revenant. Because we should talk about that. So I recently saw The Revenant, and this is another one where I hated the ending. Because to be honest, I would have preferred the ambiguous ending where we don't get the closure via murder. But whatever. But I will.
Oh, but
say,
the point was that it wasn't his murder.
True. Yeah. I don't know. I just didn't like the ending.
That's fair. I mean, I found it to be a very unsettling ending, which I appreciated for an extremely unsettling movie. I'd like to say that I'm kind of mad that Forrest Goodluck did not get any kind of nod, because I thought he did an incredible job communicating a lot with very few words about, like, his, you know, the Hawk's relationship with his father. But I guess that's neither here nor there.
Oh, yeah. That's a fair point. That's so sad. I mean,
you know, I know also Tom Hardy got nominated, but as far as I know, you can have more than one supporting actor in a movie. And I'm not going to say that Tom Hardy was not as good as Forrest Goodluck, but I thought that Forrest Goodluck actually kind of had a bit of a harder job, because Tom Hardy...
got a lot of dialogue.
Yeah. And I mean, Tom Hardy's part was really interesting in that he's the villain and he's an extremely banal villain. And you get to spend a lot of time hearing him talk himself into doing really terrible shit, which is kind of psychologically interesting. But
I like his performance because he really transforms into that character. Like,
he kind of does that with every performance he does. Tom Hardy's...
He just kind of disappears
into the character.
I like that.
The only person I know of, the only actor that disappears more into a character than Tom Hardy is fucking Oscar Isaac, where, like, you can't even tell. You're like, this is the same guy, what?
Well, the guy from Lincoln, what the hell is his name? Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, well, he's kind of like
He's a method actor.
Yeah, he's the biggest method actor out there right now.
He cracks me up because he said, like, he asked people on the set of Lincoln, like, they have to call him Mr. President, and he stayed in character the whole time. And that, to me, like, that would just be a surreal experience to be walking into a room, and here's fucking Daniel Day-Lewis with the Lincoln beard talking Lincoln to you.
Yeah, I'd just like to witness that someday, as long as it's not a terribly because I'm trying, that would be really cool for Lincoln, but just imagine, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis a la Gangs of New York. And I want to say, actually, I think that might be one of the things that ruined Brooklyn a little bit for me, because every time they're talking, you know, Irish immigrants, that all I can think is fucking Gangs of New York, which I know is a different time period, but...
Fair enough. Okay, so The Revenant, so it's Alejandro Iñárritu, if I think I've got the name correctly. There's a ny in there because there's a little till on, I don't know. I hope I got it right. Obviously starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hardy, Domhnall Gleeson, Will Poulter, Forrest Goodluck, which is cool. That's an awesome name. Can we just say it's got Emmanuel Lubezki for cinematography. And if this movie does not win on cinematography grounds, I'm just going to have a fit.
Well, the one place, the only acceptable way for The Revenant to lose is if it loses to Mad Max.
I'm not even sure I could say that. I thought visually The Revenant is the best film of the year, just visually.
Well, I think The Revenant is also cheating because it's filmed in Alberta, and it's just, whoever their location scout was just deserves to get kissed. I mean, and that's, I felt like this movie, when it's not all about how much it sucks to be Leonardo DiCaprio, is basically like a tourism brochure for Alberta. Like,
yeah, but it is beautiful.
Oh, it's so gorgeous. And I mean, there's so many beautiful shots of like the vastness of the wilderness. And, you know, the tiny little dude who it's trying to murder.
It is, I mean, the direction is really good. The cinematography is really good. There's just some amazing shots in this that are just mesmerizing. It's almost like being in another world at times. I like the film. I like almost all of the film. I thought it was very, very good. I felt the story was kind of eh, but at the same time, I don't think it's about the story really anyway, so...
See, this is where I wish we had David and that he'd seen this movie, because I would like to hear his take on, like, what school of filmmaking and all that. I mean...
Yeah.
Did you watch Iñárritu's movie from last year? I'm now having a brain fart. Birdman?
No, I've not seen it.
Oh my god, was it Birdman? Is that the name of it?
I think so.
Yes, Birdman. I mean, as a story, this movie was much more coherent than Birdman, just because it was so simple. Like, I still don't know what the fuck is up with Birdman. It was...
It's Michael Keaton being cute. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. We should note that he is a director from Mexico, so...
Yes.
Kind of a big deal. And he is nominated for Best Director.
Which is that's like the one kind of spot of color in the Oscars this year. But Yeah, I mean, the story, it's not like a super sophisticated story in The Revenant, and it doesn't need to be. It's like man versus man and man versus wilderness and, you know, revenge.
And Leonardo DiCaprio desperately trying to get his Oscar win.
Like,
for what?
I am like, if the man does not, just give this man his fucking Oscar, because I am terrified what he's going to do next year if he doesn't get an Oscar.
He like, could do something insane.
He's going to eat like a baby in real time.
He might
eat human
flesh. In the next film he makes, they won't be able to release it because it'll violate all the rules of censorship that we have.
Probably. Yeah. It's just, oh my god, yeah.
But The Revenant's really good. I liked it symbolically. There's a lot of really interesting visual symbolism. I mean, the acting is really good. Some of these cast members I did not expect to be as good as they were, and then they were just really exceptional. Really wonderful to watch. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say, you know, you mentioned you're not sure you could ever watch Room again. I can already tell. I'd never want to watch The Revenant again. I watched it once. If somebody made me like a supercut that's just all the pretty landscapes with none of the like screaming and foaming at the mouth,
well, no,
then I would take it.
What if they made that same film, but it was Werner Herzog talking to you the whole time?
I could take that. I could take that a lot better than watching the act, because the movie is just, and this is a reason, like, in all seriousness, I actually do hope Leonardo DiCaprio gets it. That sounds really bad when I put it that way. Receives the Oscar for, because his performance was good, but his performance is also the reason I don't want to see this movie again, because it's like, you know, watching a man getting tortured to death by his fellow man and nature and refusing to die, basically.
He wants revenge for his boy.
Yeah.
He killed my boy. Oh,
God, yeah. Oh, that movie was really rough to watch in certain places.
He seems like just a shit dad in this movie, though.
Oh, yeah. There is not a character in this movie that's actually a decent person except for Hawk, and he gets murdered.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because even, like, okay.
Well, Domhnall really Gleeson, like, he's
well,
right.
Domhnall Gleeson, yeah, except he's super racist. Because he's a white person in the West.
He's less racist than everyone else, though, except maybe Leonardo DiCaprio's character.
Yeah, but let's just consider that for a moment. Like,
that's fair.
I'm not, yeah, I mean, they're all, like, really terrible people, and I was sad when Captain Hot Ginger got murdered. But when you step back and think about it, he is still, like, a terrible, terrible
Captain
racist person.
Captain Hot Ginger.
I didn't know what his name was, so I called him Captain Hot Ginger. Because he's hot and ginger.
Okay, let's move on. All right, we got to back one up because we have a very important film called The Martian.
Yes.
Which also has received quite a few nominations, including Matt Damon for Best Actor, which I think he deserves. His performance is quite good.
Yeah, well, and if nothing else, he had the challenge of mostly not having anyone to act off of.
He talked to potatoes.
Yeah, I mean, he was basically his entire time he's getting to talk to inanimate objects.
Yeah.
Which is not exactly an easy task.
Yep, that's true. So this is based on, obviously, The Martian by Andy Weir, directed by Ridley Scott, produced by Simon Kinberg, also starring Jessica Chastain, Kristen Wiig, Jeff Daniels, Michael Pena, Sean Bean is apparently in this, Kate Mara, is it Mara? Crap.
I have no idea, but I will note that Sean Bean is in this and does not die, but is the cause of a really fantastic Lord of the Rings cast joke that is not obviously not in the book, and I loved it so much.
Yeah, it also has Chiwetel Ejiofor, Axel Henny, Sebastian Stan. So there's enough for people of almost every fandom.
Donald
to
Glover,
go.
Yeah.
Yep, Donald Glover's in this, so yeah, it's pretty an interesting cast. I liked it overall. This is another one where I thought the ending, I hated the ending. I don't know if it's in the book because I haven't read the book, but yeah, I did. I just didn't.
No,
like the ending.
That ending is not in the book.
Yeah, I don't like it.
I think they, there's just this urge to kind of like tie everything up in a bow and have like the lesson of the movie. I mean, the ending of the book is fine. I would look it up right now, except I loaned the book to my friend Karina, who loved it. What I one thing I really appreciated this about this film is that we're getting like a hard sci-fi movie that's making it up into Best Picture that isn't super serious. Because, like, I mean, Interstellar had some very hard sci-fi elements to it, but is very much a drama. Whereas, I remember in the Golden Globes, The Martian got put in Best Comedy or Musical, and everyone was like, what the fuck, because it's really not a musical, and I would not call it a comedy, but you also kind of have to go, I'm not sure what else I'd call it, because it's definitely not a serious drama. The focus is not, you know, Matt Damon doing battle with himself, basically, which is kind of how dramas work. And it's a sci-fi movie, and there's not a category in the Golden Globes for best sci-fi. So they were like, I don't know, comedy or musical, because that makes sense. I mean, I guess there's a lot of ABBA that gets played. So they were
there's quite a bit of Mama comedy. Yeah. It wouldn't be a film that I would think of as fitting in the comedy category. But at the same time, it's an enormously funny movie. There's comedy through
Well, this is what I would
level.
Say is it is not there is not comedy, there is humor.
Ah, okay.
Cuz you know
the situations
purpose of it
are
is,
comical. Yeah.
Yeah, it's more that the man is using you know, there is a lot of humor in it because the man is using humor as a survival device, which is something that is very prominent in the book too.
I do like the moment when he's talking to NASA and he like curses, I think on like live television. I don't think we hear it in the movie, but he basically tells them to fuck off or something.
Yeah,
right.
He cusses way more in the book, and you know they just can't do that and have the rating that they had for the film.
But I love that the scene that immediately comes after it is, like, I can't remember who, it's probably Jeff Daniels, like, talking to the president, or the president's, like, liaison, right? And having to tell him, like, he's under a lot of stress, like, this isn't normal, don't worry, he won't do it again.
Yes!
Like, no,
well,
he's gonna do
like,
it again.
My favorite scene is when he dips the potato in crushed Vicodin, because he's run out of ketchup.
Yeah.
And so on one level, that's really funny. And on one level, you're like, oh my God, this man is on the edge of losing his goddamn mind.
Yeah. You got to remember, too, he's eating potatoes that he has grown in soil with human shit manure.
Yep. With
those
his own
potatoes
poop
cannot
and his
taste
poop.
Good. They got to taste like shit. Like, I'm sorry, that was not
that
as a pun.
I don't know, but I mean, remember, he is the best botanist on Mars.
Well, because he's the only botanist on Mars.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a lot of good lines. Yeah.
There is so much to love about this movie.
It is really good. I really enjoyed it. I found it a lot of fun. Again, the only thing I didn't like is I felt like what's the right word? It chickened out on the ending. That's the thing I just get so tired of. You don't need the big fancy ending where everything gets tied up in a neat little bow. Leave a little bit to our imagination, please. We'd get that with Mad Max, right? The end of it is, like, they don't spend, like, 5 extra minutes, like, saying, like, here's what the society after Furiosi Returns is like. And by the way, also, Mad Max goes on a journey and meets, like, a talking cat, and they become best friends, and they start, like, a rock band. With the leftover bits from that, the flaming guitar guy. Yeah. Like, that's not the story we get in that. We get, this narrative is over. We don't know what happens next, but that's okay. We don't need it. Leave it there.
Yeah. No, it's a common failing, and part of it is just because movies are so collaborative. You know, who knows what the original script looked like? I don't know. Maybe I'm trying to remember if Andy Weir was involved in writing the script. Who knows?
It doesn't say here that he was. I mean, it doesn't list him in the screenplay category. So my guess is he may have had like the very minimal of input, if any. Yeah. Otherwise, if he had more input, they would have put him in the category for screenplay, right?
Yeah, if he was credited as writer. Cause
yeah, or producer
or something. There's like a whole
thing
about
yeah.
how crediting is done with writing, so he was not the primary writer on the draft of the script they used.
Yeah, but in any case. So, okay, so we got two films left to discuss, and then we're just going to kind of briefly discuss the other categories to the best of our ability, at least.
Yeah.
One is the film you have not seen, which is Room.
Well, the next two are both films that I haven't seen, so it is the Sean show.
It is the Sean show. Okay, well, I'll try to be super quick then. Room, I think, is easily one of the best films of last year. It is some... Well, let me just say one thing. Tremblay, who's the boy who's in the film, did not get nominated for Best Actor or Best Supporting Actor, whatever he would have fit in, and I think that honestly is a mistake. This is a little kid. Like a tiny... I think he's like 8 or 9 years old, and he gives an impressive performance for a child, for anyone. He's believable at every level. He's amazing. Brie Larson, also amazing in this film. The acting is superb. The story is really good. It's very tough. It's a hard subject to watch. The first half hour of it, I almost stopped watching, and then it finally does the switcheroo and things change. I think what made this film, I knew this film should be in the top two running, was there's a great scene later in the movie when Brie Larson's character decides to take a television interview. And you realize just how crass and just gross and dirty popular television journalism is now because of the kinds of questions they ask her. And they're just skeevy, nasty, disgusting, immoral questions that you just don't ask somebody who's gone through this experience. But she asks it like, oh, this is a totally expected question. You should be ready to field this. In that moment, watching that cringeworthy moment, that's when I knew this movie's amazing, because it actually went there. It actually showed us something that was real and was also deeply critical of our culture and the way in which we treat victims, which we don't always get in movies. We don't always get that. We get the victims, but we don't always get the wider cultural perspective. So, yeah. So that's all I'll say. Performances exceptional. The story is really good. The direction is really good. It's just damn good. It belongs here. Absolutely. Spotlight, another film. I think Spotlight's really good. I don't think it should win Best Picture. I think what I liked about Spotlight is even though it's not actually a thriller, it felt like a thriller every time they revealed some new detail about the sexual abuse in the Catholic Church.
Oh, interesting. So it's basically a thriller where you already know all of the answers. But
well,
it's told in such a way that it's like you already know what's going on, but
yeah.
they manage to tell it in such a way that it still feels like there's tension.
It is because every time this, like, you're just my jaw was dropped at a few points where I'm just like, because some of it I didn't know. There's at the end of the film, I think the most like the horrifying moment you get to is at the end. They show these slides, like basically just the screen just shows the list of cities where other scandals of priests molesting children have happened, and the list just keeps going on and on and on. And there's like 30, 40 cities on each slide, essentially, right? And you just realize like it's two now, two of these. Okay, so we're getting close to 100. Oh no, it's third one, fourth one, fifth one, and you're just like, holy fuck! Like this isn't like just, it's set in Boston. It's just focusing on the Boston side of it where the scandal was released because it's the Boston Globe. But it's, I don't even know how to, like, how do you respond? Like, how does the Catholic Church still exist? This isn't like it's just like the United States. This was all over the world. You know, probably thousands and thousands of children molested and abused by priests, by hundreds of priests. And it's fucking insane to me that like there's any question, like I don't get it. I don't understand how anyone could look at the Catholic Church. I mean, maybe with this new guy, I don't know how he's handling these kinds of things, but how you could trust the Catholic Church. I don't get it. Cause there's no part of me that would, like, I would not want my kid in a Catholic Church ever. If I had a kid, I don't have a kid, I have a cat, but. Yeah, that's just how
you're not sending your cat to be an altar kitten.
No, why? No, it's You can tell the movie affected me a bit because I'm a little bit squirmy in my chair, but it's really good. It's all I'll say is it unveils it in a really unique way. And even though there's no action in the movie, every time they start to discover some new detail, stuff that I didn't know about either in some cases, it feels like the tension, like it's mounting tension, and then we get a little bit of a release, but then you know there's some more shit going on, so they gotta uncover that. It's like, it's good. That's all I'll say. I don't think it's best picture quality in terms of like the number one, but it is one of my top five on the list because it's really good. Yeah. And Michael Keaton gives a good performance. Like, I don't know. What is
he
with
normally
that
does.
Yeah. It's just sort of like he went from doing that one thing where he made clones of himself and they each got dumber each time he did it to making Birdman and then this movie. He's confusing me. Stop it, Michael Keaton. You're Batman, yeah. For Christ's sake.
Oh my God.
I love Michael Keaton.
The original movie Batman.
He is. Well, anyway, so we'll just talk briefly, I think, about the other categories, because obviously most of the films we just talked about are in these categories. There are obviously
I want to hear your opinion of Creed now. Get a Best Picture nomination, and you have seen and I did not get a chance to.
So I would put Creed. So here's the thing. I haven't seen The Big Short, so I can't comment on The Big Short. Creed is better than Bridge of Spies, but Creed is not better than Ex Machina. And I think the absence of Ex Machina in Best Picture is just stupid. That makes no sense to me that you could put Bridge of Spies there, but not Ex Machina. It makes no sense. So I don't know. And there are only 8, so they could have 10. So why aren't Creed and Ex Machina here? Right? Because they can have 10 in the category, right?
I think they... Did they expand it up to 10?
I thought they expanded it to 10. But they're not here. But anyway.
No, it's only 8, I guess.
Oh, it's only 8? Oh, then yeah, drop Bridge of Spies.
Hold on. Oh wait, I think it might be.
Well, in any case, point is,
It's the nomination limit got increased to 10 best pictures.
Then it should be here. Keep in mind, I have not seen Concussion, which I heard is pretty good, which is another film that people cite as one that got snubbed. I think Creed is pretty good. I liked it a lot. I think my biggest issue with it is it feels sort of like Brooklyn, where it gets the job done, but it doesn't go the extra mile for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so if Brooklyn is here, Creed should be here. But if you drop Brooklyn, Creed shouldn't be there. I'm not sure why Sylvester Stallone has got a nomination, because while his performance is good, there are better supporting performances that were this year. And I don't understand why they got, like, Tremblay from Room. I don't understand why he's not here. Why is he not in Best Supporting Actor? That makes no fucking sense to me at all. So I liked Creed. I think it's a good movie. It's a lot of fun, but it is very much kind of like we got the job done. We ended the movie at the point where we need to go. I would have liked, I think, more delving into Creed's character and his conflict with his father who's dead. Right, because he doesn't know his father, right? He's the son of Apollo Creed, but he did, like, Apollo Creed died before he was even born. And that's kind of the story, is he's, like, living in his father's shadow. And I don't think they delved into that enough for me. And that's, I think, where the meat of the story was. And I think that this felt like, I guess, like a movie that was like a handoff, like we're going to start a new franchise. So we still have to, like, play on the kind of older movies with the Rambo stuff, but anyway, it is overall good. I mean, Michael B. Jordan's performance is really good. The choreography, I don't know how they did it, because there's a lot of actual boxing that seems to be going on. My understanding is that they actually staged the boxing, like there's actual boxing occurring, in which case that's really cool. And that shows his dedication, Michael B. Jordan's dedication to the character, that he obviously learned boxing and then actually took hits. So good for him. Yeah, so I mean, it's fine. It's a good movie. I don't think it's not best picture in terms of, like, I wouldn't put it in the top five. But I could see it being there instead of Brooklyn, and certainly instead of Bridge of Spies, which Bridge of Spies, like, just doesn't belong here at all. It just needs to be removed. Creed's a better film than Bridge of Spies by a mile. That's where I would say. There's a lot of films I haven't seen. I really wish I had seen Concussion.
Well, and yeah, and now looking at that, they did expand the Best Picture to 10.
Its absence makes no sense. Why Ex Machina and Creed are not there. I mean, there are a lot of films that could be here that aren't here. And they've got two fucking slots, so just put them in there, for Christ's sake. But, yeah. So, I don't understand it, but, you know, it's
okay.
The Academy.
Here's the, I guess, part of the answer. 2 years after this change, the Academy revised the rule again so that the number of films nominated was between 5 and 10. Nominated films must earn either 5% of first place rankings or 5% after an abbreviated variation of the single transferable vote. So it's basically like the Hugo thing. The Hugo short story rule that I think we're talking about getting rid of.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah.
Just because it's made for really truncated categories.
Yeah, which is stupid. I mean, at least in this case, clearly you got 8 out of 10 instead of like, well, we only have 5, which would be closer to what happens with the Hugos, where like we end up with like 2 nominees or whatever. But
yeah, just because the votes get way too spread out. And maybe that's just like there were so many good films this year. But yeah, again, like really, Bridge of Spies?
Well, I
think a lot of it is just it's Steven Spielberg and
he's got fanboys or girls.
Well, and you know, I'm sure he knows how to
play the system.
Market because a lot of it is just like this massive marketing exercise for making sure that people see the movie and wine and dine and all that.
So here's the thing I don't understand. So like just glancing back over the best actor, actress, supporting, and so on categories, right? You look in there and you see a bunch of films that aren't on the list. Right.
That's pretty normal though.
But it doesn't make sense to let me put it this way, right? So we have The Danish Girl, and I know you have opinions about Danish Girl. I've not seen it. I know a lot of people, especially in the trans community, as we talked off podcast, right, have huge issues with this movie. But setting that conversation aside for a moment, it has best actor and best supporting actress for the two most important roles in that movie, and yet it has no best picture nomination, which seems odd to me. Because how can you have two of the most important people in the film be nominated, but then somehow they aren't, like the film itself is not good enough to make that top 10? That doesn't make sense to me. I mean, some of the other ones I could kind of understand because they're just kind of one-offs. Like I get like from a statistical standpoint, Creed only got the 1, right? So, okay, fine, right? I think if you're going to give Sylvester Stallone, though, a nomination, then Michael B. Jordan has to get one, too, because...
Well, and I mean, some of these I'm really wondering about, because, like, okay, actress in a leading role. Jennifer Lawrence got For Joy.
Because she's Jennifer Lawrence.
Well, that's the thing, is, like, I have not seen Joy, and the reason I haven't seen Joy is because I was curious about it, so when I checked some reviews, and everyone basically was like, this movie sucks, and I don't know what kind of drugs they gave Jennifer Lawrence, but she's like sleepwalking her way through this, which really makes me wonder.
It's because she's J-Law.
So it's kind of like, that makes me wonder if like Sylvester Stallone, which I'm sure he'd turn in a solid performance, but you know, if it's also just that he's Sylvester Stallone, kind of like Bridge of Spies is because it's Steven Spielberg.
It's a possibility that that's kind of the problem, that maybe there's an insularness to the
Academy.
I think
there's... Yeah.
And one that goes beyond the kind of racial problems, but more insularness in terms of the kinds of people that are in there, like, already have favoritism, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, so we should talk about some of these categories. So, you know, best actor, we've got Bryan Cranston for Trumbo, Matt Damon for The Martian, Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant, Fassbender for Steve Jobs, as obviously Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
And Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl. Best actress is Cate Blanchett in Carol, which, great. I don't understand why Carol is not a Best Picture nominee. That makes no fucking sense to me either.
Oh, did you watch Carol?
Oh, Carol's good.
Okay.
It is good. It really navigates that tension between its period where you can't be openly gay and like just dealing with that, like the consequences and the difficulty with navigating that environment. I mean, just imagine like how complicated dating seems in Brooklyn, right?
Mm-hmm.
That amplified a million times because anybody that you meet that you express interest in could utterly fuck you over.
And, oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it deals with some of those issues. It's really interesting. Blanchett's performance is very good. I think Carol should be a Best Picture nominee. Again.
So it's another one where you're like, eject Bridge of Spies, get Carol in here.
Well, I would eject like four of the films, probably, to stick Carol in, because I think Carol's one of my top five films of the year. Easy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My top five are like Mad Max, Fury Road, Ex Machina, Carol, what was the other one? The Revenant and Room, I think, are my top five at the moment. Maybe Spotlight.
That sounds like a good top five to have. I think mine are pretty similar, other than, you know, I have obviously not seen Room, so
yeah.
I mean, The Martian kind of takes that spot. But
fair.
Thinking about, like, the, you know, Matt Damon and Leonardo DiCaprio, they both have that same problem where they, you know, which, not problem, but they both have that same challenge where they spend so much time by themselves.
Yeah.
And so much of their acting is just, you know, against the scenery.
Yeah.
And they both did a really good job, but in very, very different ways, because they're very different movies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so speaking just briefly on the Best Actor, Actress categories, I mean, how do you feel about those categories? Are people that you don't think should be here, or do you think that they make sense?
I mean, part of the problem is I haven't seen a lot of these movies.
Yeah, me too.
Other than, like, I question Jennifer Lawrence, not because I've seen Joy, but because what everyone else said about Joy, I'm just like, why? Who even saw this movie?
Yeah.
And, like, I haven't seen Trumbo. I haven't seen Steve Jobs. I'm never going to fucking watch The Danish Girl because fuck that and fuck Eddie Redmayne.
Isn't The Danish Girl the same year in which he was in Jupiter Ascending? Isn't that last year?
Yeah, I think Jupiter Ascending was at the beginning of the year. But, I mean, release schedules, who knows?
Yeah.
Like, if nothing else, I have no doubt they obviously filmed at different times, but, like, Jupiter Ascending, if nothing else, spent a lot more time in post-production because it had all the CGI.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, the other thing is, I'm so mad at Eddie Redmayne just because he's basically going around and trying to pretend like he's a super big spokesman for trans issues, and it's insulting.
At least trying what a certain someone didn't do when they played it. A trans person. Didn't even mention all of the trans people that
But I mean, if you want to take on that, just like, you know, go see what trans women are saying about it, because I think a lot of them would like to push Eddie Redmayne off a cliff right now, and I would not blame them.
Well, I know I want to push the director maybe down a flight of stairs, not off a cliff. I don't want to kill him. Because his response to the criticism has been, like, the reason I picked Eddie Redmayne is I knew that he could do the job. And I'm like, yeah, that's not an answer to the criticism. Like, I get that Eddie Redmayne's a good actor and all, and, like, you have faith that he can pull off the role, but yeah, honey, no.
Yeah, and, I mean, there are some very good trans women actors out there, so trans women actors out there.
Just pick them up. Put them in a damn movie. It's Tom Hardy. There's that great GIF, right? Where he's talking about women in specific, but you could just translate it to anything, right? Where he's just like, I would like to see, like, you know, roles that are traditionally for men. And you just put a woman in there and you just go.
Oh, yeah. No, bless Tom Hardy for, well, I still someday, I want my, like, completely gender swapped, version of Henry V.
I would watch that.
That was the thing that always just filled me with so much tragedy, like, when I was young, because Henry V is my favorite Shakespeare play, and there's so many good, like, amazing speeches, and I was like, and a woman will never get to do these.
Helen Mirren, one day.
Oh my god. Well, I mean, for Henry, you need someone like on the younger side, but you know.
Hey, now, don't be ageist. You could do it. You could do it. Age swapped, gender swapped.
Okay,
Henry
no. I was going to say what I want is I want Helen Mirren as Exeter.
Oh, okay, all right, yeah, I got gotcha.
Yeah, because Exeter gets like those really amazing, you know, like, hey, French King, you want to talk shit about my master, but they're going to come sweeping in and fuck you up, like those amazing speeches. God, see, now I'm gonna sit there. I'm gonna have to just sit down and think about like my dream cast.
You will. But
I'll make it a blog. Anyway, we need to move on.
We need to move on, yeah, because we're gonna run out of time. Anyway, so yeah. I mean, I kind of feel the same way. I've not seen some of the films, so I can't comment on some of these choices. I do think that Cate Blanchett and Brie Larson, one of those two has to win in Best Actress, or I just will not consider it a legitimate win because they're both really exceptional. I don't think Matt Damon's gonna win. I feel so bad for DiCaprio, but I don't think he's gonna win it.
I mean,
I feel like he's screwed.
I believe in him. I believe in him. And if Eddie Redmayne wins, I'm gonna flip my TV.
Fair enough. Okay, so Best Supporting Actor, Actress. So we have Christian Bale, Tom Hardy, Mark Ruffalo, Mark Rylance, and Sylvester Stallone. And then we have Jennifer Jason Leigh, Rooney Mara, Rachel McAdams, Alicia Vikander, and Kate Winslet. So again, there are a couple films we've not seen. So The Danish Girl, Steve Jobs, you've not seen Spotlight, I've not seen Hateful Eight.
And you haven't seen The Big Short. And
I've not seen, but you haven't seen Creed.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, you know, of the three, remind me who the hell Mark Rylance was playing again.
He's the spy.
Okay.
Rudolf Abel.
So basically, of the three movies in actor in a supporting role that I've seen, I'd pick Mark Rylance.
Over Tom Hardy, really?
I mean,
I just thought Tom Hardy's performance was better. But maybe you're in disagreement.
I wouldn't like throw a fit if it was Tom Hardy instead of Mark Rylance. I'm okay with either of those, but you know, I was not that impressed by what Christian Bale did in The Big Short.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if Mark Rylance would win. I mean, my choice would be probably Tom Hardy followed by Mark Ruffalo.
But again,
haven't seen Spotlight, so you can't argue with me. So
that's true. Well, and I mean, I have a general love in my heart for Mark Ruffalo, so I'm totally willing to go with that.
He seems just so lovable. But Best Supporting Actress, my personal choice is Rooney Mara, who should win, but probably won't. She's just mesmerizing in Carol. Wow. I don't know how to describe it.
I can literally have no opinion in actress in a supporting role because I haven't seen any of these.
Well, there we go. So, yeah, and I don't have
an opinion. So Sean wins, just automatically.
We won't talk too much about all the other categories because it does get very complicated, especially since we haven't seen most of these. Cinematography, we'll note that Ex Machina does have Best Original Screenplay. It probably won't win because it's up against things like Inside Out, and Straight Outta Compton is in there. That's a tough category. Best Adapted includes some of the stuff we've already talked about. That's going to be an impossible category I don't know how they're going to pick out of there because it's Big Short, Brooklyn, Carol, The Martian, and Room. And even if we just assume they're probably not going to give it to The Martian because it's a sci-fi movie, that still leaves you with Big Short, Brooklyn, Carol, and Room.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how you pick from that. So that's going to be a tough one. But we'll skip down. You know, Inside Out is obviously Best Animated Picture nominee. There's some other really great ones in there. We've got Best Foreign Film, Documentaries. We've not watched them, so we can't talk about them. But where are you?
Directing.
Where is it?
So it's under costume. So it's The Big Short, Mad Max Fury Road, The Revenant, Room, and Spotlight. And is really tough.
I don't know how you pick.
Well, I'd throw The Big Short out of there just because, I mean, the director had some really cool ideas, but when you look compared to Mad Max and The Revenant, you know, it's like a steamroller. So
I think it's between those two, Mad Max and The Revenant, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's going to be. I mean, I kind of wonder if after the blow up about how white the Oscars are, if The Revenant is going to get it just because it's going to be like, no, see, we can, you know, give the award, which I hate that I'm thinking that way, because Iñárritu's, why do I keep saying Toe? Iñárritu's work was so good, and he totally deserves it if he gets it, and I don't want it to be tainted that way. But the Oscars is also like this big political game, and it would not surprise me if there's a bunch of assholes that do just look at it like that.
That's a possibility. I would agree, though, that Iñárritu's, his direction is really good.
Oh, so good. Yeah,
and
I mean,
it really is for me. It is between those two. I mean, I love Room. I think Room is great, but I do think the two most compelling directors on that list are George Miller and Iñárritu. Yeah.
Yeah. And if either one of those wins, I would not be upset. I'm having a feeling it's probably going to be The Revenant just because of this blow up. Even though, you know, God knows in any other year, it could win just as well on its own because it's so good.
Yeah. So the last thing we should mention is actually cinematography, which is a category that suspiciously doesn't include Star Wars. Star Wars makes it in Best Visual Effects, which is just too obvious.
Well, yeah. Actually, Star Wars is also in film editing.
Oh, there it is. Up there. Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
So
and sound editing.
So for film editing, we get The Big Short, Mad Max, Fury Road, The Revenant, Spotlight, and Star Wars. And honestly, I don't know what I would pick because, you know, I tossed The Big Short out for director, but the editing in The Big Short is really, really good and very interesting. And Mad Max does so much cool stuff, and The Revenant is beautifully edited, and
Yeah. Cinematography, though, it's got to be between Mad Max and The Revenant. I've not seen Sicario or The Hateful Eight, so I can't comment on those. Carol is good, but I didn't think the cinematography was that. So, like, it didn't blow me away, is what I would say. I mean, I'm sure if I saw it again, with that in mind, I might notice more things. I mean, there's certainly some nice shots out of car windows. But when you're comparing that to Mad Max and The Revenant, which...
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, that's such a tough choice.
My guess is it's going to The Revenant. Because just some of the shots the of the landscape and the way in which they use things like fog. I mean, that opening shot of them walking through the water.
Oh my God, yeah.
Is that not one of the most beautiful it's just incredible.
So here's what I'm going to hope is The Revenant gets cinematography, but Mad Max gets editing. Because Mad Max is edited in such a unique way because it is, you know, an action film that's not edited like classically like an action film.
Yeah, that's
fair. Which is so, such a cool thing.
All right, well, I think that's all we have time to talk about. Because
yeah, we have run
out
of time because I got up late. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll have some thoughts after the Oscars that we'll probably share on Twitter. And it'll be interesting to watch.
If it's too much of an upset, maybe we'll have like a little podcast that's just like 10 minutes of you and I screaming about how everything is bullshit.
It'll be like that place that the ship in Event Horizon goes to where just everyone screams and screams in Latin. Yeah.
And then we will summon a demon.
We'll summon a demon. All right. We got to get out of here. So. If you want to give us your thoughts, that's easy enough to do. You can send us an email, totallypretentious@gmail.com, or you can find either one of us on Twitter. I'm at Sean Duke, that's Sean with a U, and Rachel is at Katsudonburi.
Yes.
You can also
like
just
Japanese
like Google
food.
Rachel
yeah.
X, and you'll find her website, which is katsudon.net, and then that'll lead you to her Twitter and to her blog, because she should be having or if she hasn't already, there should be a thing about Gods of Egypt.
Yeah, you need to go to my blog and donate money to Act for Change so that I watch Gods of Egypt drunk and say really mean things about it so that you don't have to watch it because it's going to be terrible.
Keep that in mind. Rachel will watch a bad movie if you donate to charity.
Yes. Everyone wins except me.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Well, thanks again, Rachel, for joining me.
I enjoyed being joined to you.
Okay.
Here's your awkward ending, Sean.
All right, we'll talk to everyone later. Bye.
Bye.